सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति
शान्ति. So we'll be
continuing in chapter 8. In fact, I think we'll be, do escape, shift F5. It'll always come up in the right place. Shift F. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Thank you. I think we'll be able to finish chapter 8. We'll see.
And we have just a few verses left. Let's begin with some recitation.
Repeat after me, please. Avyaktad vyaktaya sarva prabhavantyah ragame ratragame praliyante tatraiva vyakta sanyake bhutagrama sahe vayam bhutva bhutva praliyate ratragame vasah partha prabhavatyah ragame Avyaktokshara hetyuktas avyaktokshara hetyuktam tamahu paramam gatam yam prapya nani vartante yat prapya tadhama paramam mama tadhama paramam mama purusha saparah partha yalabhyastvananyaya bhaktya labhyas tasyantasthani bhutani yasyantasthani yena sarvam idam tatam yena sarvam idam tatam yatra kale tvana vrittim avratam chaiva yoginah prayata yantitam kalam vakshyami bharata shabha Agnir Jyotirah Shuklah Shanmasahutarayanam Yatra Prayata Gacchanti Brahma Vidojanah Dhumo Ratrista Krishna Dhumo Ratrista Krishna Tatra Chandramasam Jyotir Tatra Chandramasam Yogi Prapya Nivartate Jagatah Shashvate Mate Ekaya Yatyana Vrittam Anyaya Vartate Punaha Naite sruti partha janan. Naite sruti partha janan. Yogi muhyati kashchana. Yogi muhyati kashchana. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu. Yoga yukto bhavarjuna. Yoga yukto Vedeshu yagneshu tapasu chaiva, yedeshu yagneshu tapasu chaiva, daneshu yat punya phalam pradishtam, daneshu yat punya phalam pradishtam, adyeti tat sarvam idam viditva, adyeti tat sarvam idam Yogi param sthanam upaiti chadyam. Yogi param sthanam upaiti chadyam. Good. And 28 is the final verse of chapter 8. So we might be able to finish today. We'll see how it goes. So in this, at the end of this chapter, talking primarily about what happens when we die, we come to this last bit of symbolism about darkness and light. And it's related in these verses to the traditional belief that when one dies during the Uttarayana, after the Uttarayana, when the sun is in the northern half of the solstice, that one goes to heaven, so to speak, and if one dies at the wrong time, one goes the other way. We talked in the last class about Bhishma Pitamaha waiting for that particular auspicious day to come before he would give up his body. And please bear in mind that this is part of a belief system, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But I think it's very important to distinguish spiritual truths from religious beliefs. Most of what we're concerned with in these classes is spiritual truth. And truth is truth. It's not that it's true in Hinduism and not true in another. Whatever is true is universally true. So most of our studies here are focused on those spiritual truths. But on the other hand, these spiritual truths come from a larger religious tradition with many specific beliefs. And these beliefs are conventionally part of the tradition, but in a way, the beliefs form a different, can we say, a different tier, a second tier, so to speak. That is to say that one can or need not embrace certain beliefs. So while it may be true that some people might believe that dying at a particular time could be more auspicious or dying at another time might be less auspicious, no doubt some people would have beliefs like that. There would be certainly stories and passages and Puranas to support such a belief. But on the other hand, many may not believe, and I would count myself among those who wouldn't believe in that. And really, it doesn't make any difference in a sense, because it's a matter of belief. We're primarily concerned with matters of knowledge. Why? Because it's that spiritual knowledge that can lead you to the final end, to the goal. All right. So with that in mind, we'll continue to look at these last verses. One final comment before we plunge in, and just to refresh your minds about what we talked last class, and that is that there's a great amount of symbolism here. So this Uttarayana and Dakshinayana, the time of year during which you die, can be taken in a symbolic way, and that's actually my preference. Uttarayana, the northern half, towards the sun, towards the light, and as we discussed during our meditation session, talking about Gayatri Mantra, towards the sun or towards the light means towards wisdom, towards a kind of wisdom that can set you free from suffering and struggling in life. On the other hand, Dakshinayana, away from the light, symbolizes then turning our backs away from spiritual wisdom. away from spiritual knowledge, leading us only to more suffering and struggle in life. Okay. We had started to look at verse 24. Let's return and finish up. Agnir Jyotiraha Shuklaha Agnir Jyotiraha Shuk Shanma Sahuttarayanam Shanma Sahuttarayanam Tatra Prayata Gacchanti Tatra Prayata Gacchanti Brahma Brahma Vedo Janaha Brahma Brahma Vedo Shanmasa, in fact, all of these, different words representing light. Look at the symbolism. Agni, fire, source of light. Jyotihi means light. Aha means ahar, is day. The word day comes. And Shukla, Shukla Paksha, referring to the time when the moon is waning. And the Uttarayanam, the Shanmasa Uttarayanam, the 6 months of the year where the sun is in the northern half. All of these are examples of light. So take it symbolically, and all of these examples of light, yet Tatra prayata, for one who prayata, who goes forth, tatra, at those times. How about at those conditions? Those who go forth with the wisdom of knowledge associated with Agni. Fire is associated with wisdom. After all, we look at the fire of wisdom burning away. Ignorance. Also, the light, jyotihi, the light of wisdom, destroying ignorance. Aha, being awake to the day, being awake to the reality. Shukla paksha, the bright half of the moon cycle. All of these, and representing wisdom. So, tatra prayata, when one travels forth, yat tatra, then. There, in that situation, when a person, prayata, goes forth with that wisdom, symbolized by knowledge, symbolized by light, when one dies, with that wisdom, symbolized by light, then what? Gacchanti Brahma. That person, gacchanti, goes to or reaches Brahma, God, the ultimate reality. And who is it that go forth and reach Bhagavan? Brahma Vidaha Janaha. Those people who are Brahma Vit, literally knowers of Brahman, knowers of truth, knowers of reality. So those endowed with knowledge at the time of death reach the ultimate goal. At the time of death. And we've talked about this in earlier verses, how the enlightened person is not subject to reincarnation. Now, before we see the next verse, we have a leading question, and that is, what if you don't quite get enlightened in this life? Way back in chapter 6, we also discussed the yoga bhrashta. That is, someone who really makes a great effort in spiritual growth in life, and comes this being a little silly now, but comes this close to gaining enlightenment and then checks out. This close, you know, this close. It's a little bit like if you're playing a lottery and you got 9 out of 10 numbers right. You're this close. Of course, close doesn't count. You either got it or you don't. So similarly. Does it work similarly in terms of enlightenment? If you come this close to enlightenment and then die, is it all lost? Is it all in vain? We had that discussion way back in chapter 6. And the answer, of course, is no, it is certainly not in vain. And that same point is reiterated in the next verse. Dhumo ratrastatha Krishna. Dhumo ratrastatha Shanmasa dakshinayanam Shanmasa dakshinayanam Tatra Chandramasam Jyotir Tatra Chandramasam Yogi Prapya Nivartate Yogi Prapya Nivartate. So, previous verse was associated with light. This verse is associated with darkness. What kind of darkness? Dhumaha. Smoke. Smoky haze. Darkness. Ratri. Night. Tatha, also Krishnaha. Krishna here is an adjective, not the noun. As a noun, it's Sri Krishna. But as an adjective, Krishna means night or darkness. Krishna Paksha, the dark half of the moon. So that referring to that dark half of the moon. Also, Shanmasa, Dakshinayanam, also the 6 months of the year when the sun is in the southern half. That's also associated with darkness. Very, just a quick aside here. Why is Dakshina both right and south? That's a funny question. I never thought about that until just this morning, looking at the text. And Dakshina can be used for right, Dakshin Hasta, or it can be used for south. Why do you think that is? Well, Sanskrit language comes from the ancient rishis who used to perform lots of rituals. When you're sitting and performing a ritual, generally you're sitting facing east. When you're sitting at or doing a ritual facing east, to your right is what direction? South. Therefore, the connection between Dakshina and south, right and south. So all of these representing darkness. And we're talking now of the middle of the second line, the yogi. So we're not talking about a person who is totally trapped in worldly delusion. We're talking about a yogi, someone who has made tremendous effort in life for spiritual growth, but, as we joked before, came this close, not quite enlightened. So what happens to that yogi having come this close, which means they're still struggling with darkness. They're still struggling with the darkness of ignorance. What happens to that yogi? Tatra. And we have to take the word gachanti. Gachanti from the prior verse. Tatra gachanti prayata. When that yogi travels forth at the tatra, then, there, at the time of death, then that yogi prapya, having obtained what? Prapya, having obtained what? Jyotihi, light. Wait a minute. First line is all talking about darkness. This one says, in the midst of darkness, he gains some light. What kind of light? Chandramasam Jyotihi, light of the moon. Now, this is very subtle, and even you're thinking, what in the world? He's laughing. What in the world is this talking about? You miss out on the light of the sun, and you're stuck with the light of the moon. What does that mean? First of all, light of the moon is reflected light. It's actually sunlight, is it not? We forget that. This light comes from the sun and reflects off the moon. So whatever comes from the moon is actually sunlight, but it's been reflected. And of course, it's much dimmer. But it is light. And at night, with a full moon, it's often bright enough that you can pretty much function at night just as if it were day, almost as if it were day. So that light of the moon is not useless, but it's very modest compared to the light of the sun. So the yogi who, having at the end of one's life, still being covered with the darkness of ignorance, but having lived a life of spiritual growth, that yogi, Chandramasam Jyotihi Prapya, obtains this reflected light, gains some light, some symbolically, some wisdom is there. And therefore, this yogi, Nivartate, this yogi will come back. Nivartate, this yogi will return. previous verse, the enlightened person who dies fully enlightened, never comes back, never is reborn again. But the yogi who has lived a spiritual life will come back, but come back, remember back in chapter 6, we said that there's some momentum. If you've lived a spiritual life now and perish before gaining enlightenment, back in chapter 6, Sri Krishna said you'll pick up the thread in your next life. Momentum will carry you forward towards further spiritual growth. And that happens to the yogi. Then we come to the last few verses, I think summarizing this light and darkness symbolism in verse 26. Shukla Krishne Gati Hete, Shukla Krishne Gati Hete, Jagata Shashvate Mate, Jagata Shashvate, Ekaya Yatyana Vrittam, Ekaya Yatyana Anyaya Vartate Punaha,
Anyaya Vartate Punaha.
Shukla Krishne Gati Hi Ete. Ete, these two. Sanskrit has a dual number, and in addition to singular and plural, here in a dual, ete, these two. Which two? Gati, these two paths. What are the two paths we're talking about? The Shukla path and the Krishna path. The Shukla, the light path, and the Krishna, dark path. So these two paths, the path of light, path of dark, symbolically, path of wisdom, path of ignorance. These two paths of light and darkness, jagataha, shashvate mate, they are mate, considered to be shashvate, to be eternal, jagataha, in this world. For this world, for this jagat, these two paths of light and darkness are shashvate mate, they're considered to be eternal. That word mate is very interesting because moments ago we were talking about belief systems. Mata is a belief system. Mate literally means these two are thought to be eternal. Eternal means part of the universe, part of the laws of the universe. They are mate, they are considered to be laws of the universe. The fact that this word mata is used can remind us perhaps that we need not be rigid about belief systems. Quick comment here. This chapter, dealing with death, associated with death are so many beliefs, including the one we talked about early on, the belief that whatever you're thinking about at the time of your death will affect where you go on from here. It's worth reflecting on how being rigid about beliefs can really get us in trouble. A good example of people being rigid about beliefs would be some of our Christian friends who are rigidly holding on to a belief that excludes evolution. So according to their belief system, there's no room for evolution. Of course, 400 or 500 years ago, it was a time of Galileo. The Church of Rome said that the sun goes around the earth. Galileo says, no, look, the earth goes around the sun. And the church hung rigidly to its belief. It was foolish then, and it's just as foolish today for anyone to cling to a belief system that pushes evolution out the door. Because these are scientific facts. These are not opinions. This, however, mata here means opinion. It means this is a belief system. The value of a belief system is what? Even our doctrine of karma is a belief system. We cannot say it is true or false. This is a fact about all belief systems. A belief system is neither true nor false. It's a matter of belief. then the question is, if we're going to evaluate beliefs, we can't evaluate them according to which one is right and which one is wrong. If they're beliefs, it means we don't know. What will happen to you when you die? We don't know. Don't know. You know what'll happen to your body, but what makes you alive, that soul, jivatma, we don't know, we believe. Which belief is true, we can't say. Which belief is false, we can't say. Which beliefs are silly, we can say. To believe that one can receive eternal damnation for a small sin is silly. We talked about this in prior classes. To say one can be rewarded with eternal heaven for some very simple-minded belief is silly. So we can say certain beliefs are silly, but we can't say which one is right or wrong. Therefore, we have to ask ourselves the key question is, what makes any belief valuable? For example, our belief in the doctrine of karma. What makes a belief valuable is not its rightness or wrongness, but rather its ability to help us lead good lives. The doctrine of karma is extremely valuable. It helps us make sense out of lives which could otherwise be baffling. It's not the good time for big, long discussion about karma, but I would think that without a belief in a doctrine of karma, it would be so much easier to get really depressed and cynical about life when you see bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people. Without the doctrine of karma, we'd really be frustrated. We might become cynical. We could even become depressed. So a belief system like karma helps us make sense out of life. It helps us live better lives. Therefore, it's valuable. So when we look at belief systems, like we find here in chapter 8, let's reflect on the fact that, first of all, they're not truths, they are beliefs, and what makes them valuable is if they help us live better lives, which implies if they don't help you live better lives, drop them. Now, please don't think this is a radical anti-anything statement. To say that if a belief doesn't help you live a good life, drop it. This is paraphrasing Sri Shankaracharya's statement. I think in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, verse 1 or 2, I think. I have to check for the location. But in that verse, in his commentary, Adi Shankaracharya says, if 1,000 scriptural statements were telling me that the sun is cold, or fire is cold, I think was his expression, he said, I would reject every one of those statements. I would reject every one of those beliefs. So what helps us makes it a valuable belief. So here, talking about these beliefs in a northern path and a southern path, beliefs, but symbolically path of knowledge, light, versus path of ignorance, darkness. So these two belief systems, these two directions, shashvate mate, are considered to be part of life, part of the world, eternal in the world. Ekaya, by one of the two, by the light, by the shukla, gati, by the bright path, ekaya, by that one, yati anavritim, yati, one goes forth, one dies, anavritim, without returning, ekaya, by one. By which one? By the path of light, one goes without returning, anyaya, but by the other, which means the dark path, anyaya, vartate, punaha. Punaha, again, vartate. Again, you come back. So by one, by the path of light, you go without returning. By the dark path, you go and come back. Again, referring really to spiritual wisdom and knowledge, One who dies enlightened does not return. One who dies not quite enlightened will return to pick up the thread and continue their path of spiritual growth. Naite surati partha janan, naite surati partha janan, yogi muhyati kashchana, yogi muhyati kashchana, tasmat sarveshu kaleshu, tasmat sarveshu kaleshu, yoga yukto bhavarjuna, yoga yukto bhavarjuna, yoga yuktaha bhava Arjuna. So here, Sri Krishna is giving Arjuna some tough advice, some hard advice. What is the advice? In the first line, na ete srati. That na has to go and join the verb. Set it aside for right now. Ete srati partha. Partha, O Arjuna. Ete, these two srati, these two paths, yogi, kashchana yogi na muhyati, put the words together. Kashchana, end of the first line. Kashchana, some yogi, some spiritual, some, here referring to enlightened person. Kashchana yogi, some enlightened person, na muhyati, is not deluded. By what? Ete srati. By these two paths, janan, knowing. Knowing these two paths, janan, knowing ete srati, knowing these two paths, kashchana yogi, na kashchana yogi mukhyati. No yogi ever gets confused. One who knows the difference between the two paths. This symbolism is so significant. To know the difference between light and dark doesn't take any intelligence, but to know the difference between that which leads to spiritual growth and that which doesn't, that's a different matter. And so often it's easy in life to take that path that kind of goes the wrong way. So often in life we have a decision to make where we can go this way, we can go this way. This way is a path of shreyas leading to spiritual growth. This is a path of prayas leading us to enjoy ourselves but not to undergo path. Well, this says that a real yogi is one who knows the difference between these two paths and always chooses correctly. Remember the joke I told you some months ago about the Sailorsburg Ashram with the flea market right across the street? This is lovely. So you go down the road to the Sailorsburg Ashram, our parent ashram. To your left is a flea market. To your right is the ashram. The choice is yours. Turn left or turn right. If you turn left, what do you find in a Pennsylvania flea market? Junk. Lots and lots of junk. You turn right into the ashram, what do you have? Brahma Vidya. And the irony of life is for every one car that turns right, there have to be 10 or 20 that turn left. So, obviously, those who turn left are not yogis. So this verse says that a true yogi, na kashchana yogi muhyati, no real yogi gets confused between these two paths, these two directions. Tasmat, therefore, Arjuna, sarveshu kaleshu, at all times, sarveshu, all, kale, kala, time, sarveshu kaleshu, at all times, yoga yuktaha bhava. Bhava, you should be. You should be what? Yoga yukta, endowed with yoga. You should be on the path of yoga. You should always be on the path of spiritual growth. When? Sarveshu, kaleshu, all the time.
Have you ever,
everyone, myself included, we have moments of weakness. We know this is the right path, and we know this is the wrong path. And then we start making excuses, like this. Well, usually I take the right path, usually I do the right thing, 99%, not 99, most of the time I take the right path. Today, let me give myself permission to take the wrong path just today. After all, most of the time, does this say once in a while it's okay to take the wrong path? Sarveshu kaleshu, at all times. Yoga yuktaha, be committed to the right path, the path of spiritual growth. O Arjuna, always be committed. And that leads us then to the very last verse of the chapter. And you'll see here it also changes to the longer meter, the dramatic meter. Vedeshu yagneshu tapasu chaiva. Vedeshu yagneshu tapasu chaiva. Dhaneshu yat punya palam pradishtam. Dhaneshu yat punya palam pradishtam. Atyeti tat sarvam idam viritva. Atyeti tat sarvam idam viritva. Yogi param sthanam upaiti chadyam.
Yogi param sthanam.
Including chapter 8, the switch of meter is to make it more dramatic, and we saw several other verses earlier in a chapter in this longer meter. Vedeshu yagneshu tapasu and daneshu. Yat punyapalam pratishtam. Yat, whatever. Punyapalam, whatever fruits of good actions, pratishtam. Are instructed, are given, are shown. So whatever religious or pious or good acts and results, whatever is taught, Vedeshu, whatever is taught in the Veda, whatever is taught Yajneshu with regard to Yajna, rituals, Tapasu with regard to spiritual practices, austerities, and Daneshu with regard to acts of charity. So with regard to Vedic teachings, with regard to ritual teachings, with regard to spiritual austerities, and with regard to charity, yat punyapalam pradishtam, whatever good fruits are being taught. By the way, this is actually a reference to topics which will be discussed in chapter 17. The topic of yajna, of rituals, tapas, spiritual austerity, and dana, charity. This is actually foreshadowing a discussion that's going to come much later in chapter 17. That's why he uses these three. So whatever has been taught by the Veda with regard to these actions, the significance here, perhaps, is these are actions which lead you on that path of spiritual growth. So whatever has been pradishtam, taught to you, to lead you on a path of spiritual growth, tat sarvam, all of that, idam, all of this which was discussed in the first half of the verse, idam sarvam, all of this, viditva, having understood it properly, having understood what the Vedas teach, what this tradition teaches about living a pious life, about living a life of spiritual growth. So viditva, knowing all of that thoroughly, atyeti yogi, the yogi, the spiritual seeker, atyeti, the enlightened one, here, the enlightened one, atyeti, goes or reaches. And what do they go or reach? Padam sthanam upaiti. They upaiti, they reach. They reach what? The padam sthanam, the ultimate place, the ultimate abode, the supreme abode, as we talked about in our last class, which is Adyam, foremost. Cha Adyam, Cha Adyam. So that foremost supreme abode they reach. Those who are enlightened reach that abode. The chapter ends then with this verse. It's common to end with a verse of stuti, praise. Many texts or even chapters will end with verses praising the subject matter. And the reason for this praise is no scripture has to say, look at me, I'm great. Scriptures don't have pride, or even the authors of scriptures don't have pride. But the reason for a verse of praise like this one is to call our attention to the value of the teachings. Sometimes we take teachings for granted. We take lots of stuff for granted. Is it not true? We take people for granted. We take our lives for granted. We take day after day for granted. We forget how valuable things are. So these verses of praise, like this one, calls our attention to how valuable these spiritual teachings are, how valuable this chapter 8 is. So with this verse, we come to the end of chapter 8. Now we have some closing material here to where our class is not going to be finished for a little while. And there's one question here to take up. But each chapter of the Bhagavad Gita ends with an ending verse. These ending verses, they're not verses and they're not technically part of the Bhagavad Gita, but they're recited traditionally at the end of each chapter. Repeat after me, please. Om Tat Sat, Om Tat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su, Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Upanishad Su, Upanishad Brahma Vidyayam, Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre, Yoga Shastre Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade, Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade Brahmakshara Yoga Nama, Brahmakshara Yoga Nama Ashtamodhyayaha. So the chapter concludes Om Tat Sat. Om invoked. Yeah, I'll explain now. Good. Om, invoking Bhagavan, Tat, that is Sat, true. This is conventionally used at the end of any teaching. Om, Tat, Sat, it's an invocation. That which you have been taught is true. Om, Tat, Sat. Iti, thus, Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su, in this blessed Bhagavad Gita, Upanishad Su, which contains the teachings of the Upanishads, which contains the wisdom of the ancient rishis. Brahma Vidyayam, in the midst of these teachings of Brahma Vidya, teachings of reality, the ultimate knowledge, spiritual knowledge. Yoga Shastre, in the midst of these teachings of yoga, here referring to spiritual practices and discipline. Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade. In the midst of this samvada, this dialogue between Shri Krishna and Arjuna, this is the Ashtamaha Adhyayaha. This is the 8th chapter, and it is Brahmakshara Yoga Nama. The name of this chapter is Brahmakshara Yoga, the chapter whose subject matter is Akshara Brahma, Brahmakshara. Akshara Brahma? Remember the opening part of this chapter, Arjuna asks these complicated questions, including what is Brahma? What is reality? And Sri Krishna says reality is Akshara, that which doesn't change. So the chapter gets its name from that expression, Brahmakshara Yoga. So, now, there's a nice question here. Oh, before we take the question, would it be nice to review the whole chapter? Yes, please. We've been using at the end of each chapter and at the beginning of each chapter this English version of the Bhagavad Gita. And it's a nice way to review a chapter or become introduced to the chapter because it's in English. We can chant it and go through the whole thing very quickly. So in just a few minutes, we can chant the whole chapter and get the meaning. And then that way, get like a review, get the big picture. Sometimes when we're so engaged in individual verses, what do they say? You can't see the forest through the trees. That happens a lot. As we chant these verses, please note what happens. Arjuna opens up with this really complicated question, 7-part question, the last part of which is about death. And Sri Krishna then answers the first parts of his questions very briefly and then spends the remainder of the chapter answering Arjuna's last 7th question about what happens when we die. First verse, listen and repeat. And then we'll chant together.
Arjuna said, what is Brahman and what is self? What is Brahman and what is self? What is karma creation to? What is karma creation to? At death when souls continue on. At death when souls how are you to be realized? How are you to be realized?
Can we put the screen down a little bit more? I'm afraid we won't be able to read the bottom line. The screen? You see, we can't see the bottom line? There we go. Thank you. Good. Yeah. The light is okay. Okay. We can chant together. We'll chant now with the next verse.
The Blessed Lord said, Brahman is true reality. Your own real nature is the self. Karma is the cause for rebirth. Creation is all finite things. When souls leave their bodies at death, with their minds fixed on me alone, they all reach my supreme abode. About this fact there is no doubt. At the final moment of death, whatever is then dwelled upon, unto that very state one goes, and is ever absorbed therein. Therefore at all times constantly, think of me as you fight the war, with your mind always fixed on me. You shall certainly come to me, when dying those with steadfast minds, devotion, strength, and yogic power, close every doorway to the world, and merge their minds into their hearts, uttering home the sacred word, while meditating upon me, leaving their bodies going forth, they reach the highest goal supreme, down from heaven's highest domains. All creatures do return reborn, but for those who have come to me, there can be no rebirth again. Unchanging and unmanifest, thus they call the ultimate goal, reaching which there is no return. That state is my supreme abode. There are two paths, one bright, one dark, thought eternal throughout the world. By one souls go without return, by the other they all come back. Yogis who clearly know these paths into delusion never fall. Therefore, Arjuna, always be steadfast in yoga constantly.
Good. So there you have a summary of the whole chapter. And bear in mind that chapter 8 kind of sticks out. The middle 6 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, chapters 7 through 12, all deal with bhakti, devotion. But this one chapter sticks out a little bit as kind of an aside, a very important one, as we discussed in our very first class on this chapter. So just bear that in mind when you're studying Bhagavad Gita or reading through the chapters, that the middle six chapters, 7 through 12, all bhakti with the exception of this chapter 8. Now, you can always drop any questions you have. I see another one in our question box. The meditation. So I think we'll take questions having to do with our Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8. This question has a very nice observation. When a baby is born in the room, the room is filled with joy and happiness. Everyone is happy and joyful, with the exception of the child who cries. Everyone is really a very clever observation. When a baby comes, everyone is happy, everyone is joyous. Baby is wailing, crying. Why is the baby wailing and crying? It was so nice and warm before. You know, on a cold morning, how you don't like to get out of bed. Think of the poor baby coming out of mother's womb into this brightly lit operating theater, wherever it is, birthing room. So the baby suffers pain. The baby is in pain. Everyone else is happy, but the baby suffers. On the other hand, when a person dies, when somebody dies, everyone is crying. Everyone is sad, sorrowful. But the person who's died is blissful, free of sadness, free from suffering. It's ulta. Notice how the two situations are really opposites. When a baby is born, everyone is happy, but the baby suffers. And when someone dies, we all cry, but we know very well the person who's passed on is free from suffering. In fact, is presently in a condition of total peace. Isn't it funny? So when a baby is born and is crying, do people say, "Oh no, the baby is crying"? Later, they may worry about the baby crying, but at that moment, they don't care that the baby is crying. They don't care that the baby is in pain or uncomfortable or dealing with this shock of coming into this world. Everyone is happy. Why? Well, they're not concerned about the baby. They're concerned about themselves. They're happy that their child was born. The focus is on whom? The child or oneself? And this is a point that this questioner is leading us to that. It's a nice question. So really, when that baby is born, that baby is suffering. And we're often not very attentive to the suffering of the newborn baby because we're so caught up in our own joy. So the focus is slightly in the wrong direction. And it's exactly the same way when someone dies, isn't it? We cry. Please tell me, who are we crying for? Be honest. We're crying for ourselves. Of course. The departed person has gone on to a condition free from suffering. They're in complete peace, utter peace. The kind of peace you have in deep sleep, you know, when you sleep at night and you hopefully get several hours of really deep, undisturbed sleep. How blissful that feels. Well, imagine just extending that. Instead of having that for several hours, it just goes on and on and on, a condition of total, unconditional peace, contentment, fullness. This is what the departed person experiences. If we can call it an experience, that is the nature of the experience, a blissful experience. And yet we cry. Clearly, we're not crying for the person. We're crying for ourselves. Now, it shows something ironic. But let's also bear in mind that even though we're actually crying for ourselves and not for the departed one, let's also remember, though, that tears are good at a time like that. Sometimes we go through a tragedy and we don't allow ourselves to experience the sadness associated with that tragedy. And then it sticks inside of us. We go on in our lives kind of feeling disconnected, incomplete. When someone dies, we lose a lot. We cry because of loss. We're losing a person who is so dear to us. The grieving we go through at such a time is normal and healthy, and we should never discourage grieving. Except if grieving goes on for week after week after week, that there's a problem there, some kind of depression. But initially, that grieving is healthy. And if someone were to say, in the days immediately following the loss of a loved one, if somebody were to say, come on, don't cry, that kind of advice is actually misdirected. It's well-intended, perhaps, but it's misdirected. The tears are a healthy part of emotional healing. That's how, when we suffer a loss, we carry an emotional wound. How do we heal from that emotional wound? The process of healing includes going through a natural process of grieving. So we should never be hesitant to allow expressions of grief. But certainly it is true that at the time of somebody's death, they have left all limitations of worldly life behind. They are in a condition of total peace. And, of course, whoever dies is just a little ahead of us. It's like we're all on a journey, and there are some people who are a little bit ahead of us on the path, and we know that we will follow in their footsteps. Is a nice English expression, to join the majority. Very interesting expression, which means that those of us who are still alive, we're in the minority, because most of the people who have ever walked this earth, they are long since gone. So one day we will join the majority. As we come to the end of this chapter, it would be a good idea to reflect on our own impending deaths. This is a heavy topic that many times people tend to avoid thinking about because it can be uncomfortable and it can bring up a lot of issues. But if we avoid thinking about the tough stuff in life, aren't we choosing to be like naive children? The end of this chapter talked about making a commitment to a path of spiritual growth, which sometimes requires turning our backs on a path that's comfortable or easy. Going into the Salisbury Ashram, you have to choose to turn your back on the glories of the flea market and turn instead towards the austere spiritual practices that take place in an ashram. It might be more pleasant to roam around in this flea market and look at all the junk and eat all the junk food that they have out there. It can be pleasant, but do you really want to reach the end of your life and look back and say, yep, I lived a pleasant life? Pleasant? The blessing of our births is so incredibly valuable. It's such an incredible blessing that to merely live a pleasant life seems utterly disrespectful of the value of this gift Bhagavan has given us. It's an incredible gift. of life. And yet, we squander it a lot. And I'll include myself in that. We all squander. Hours are squandered, days are squandered, weeks and months and even years of our lives can be squandered. Yet we know that the end is coming. Then why are we squandering our days? Well, one of the reasons we are prone to squander our days is we keep ignoring the fact that the end is coming. If we look squarely at the fact that we have a finite length of time left, to face that fact is not uncomfortable. In fact, should fill you with enthusiasm for living more intensely. If we fail to recognize the limited scope of our lives, then we're too casual and we squander too much of our lives. To contemplate our own death is not grim. Absolutely not. Isn't it our death that makes this life so valuable? Suppose you were going to live 1,000 years and you squander a decade. Who cares? You think you squander a decade? Well, we don't live 1,000 years. We live a short time, but several of us do squander decades. We do. We squander months and years and even decades. Well, if we reflect on how brief our lives truly are, we'll see the value of each day, of each moment. And this is when we live most intensely. This is when we make the maximum use of this incredible gift we've been given. So when we turn to chapter 8, or when we have other spiritual teachings that deal with death, somehow we have to address our disinclination to think about dying. From a spiritual standpoint, thinking about dying is good, so long as you don't become morose. Being depressed and morose all the time is obviously not good. But to reflect on the shortness of life is a wonderful practice. I'll remind you now, every year, the first meditation session of a new year will always be this topic. It'll be a reflection on our lives, a whole meditation, really a contemplation in which we reflect on our whole lives and we reflect on our coming death. It's a wonderful meditation. We'll be doing that soon. It'll be the first meditation session in the new year, so we will do that. But maybe we shouldn't. You think once a year is enough to reflect on the shortness of our lives? Probably not. Probably we can fall into habits of squandering our lives frequently. So maybe we should reflect a little more frequently about the shortness of our lives. Again, it makes us see the value of our lives, and that makes us live with intensity, making full use of the blessings that Bhagavan has given us. Okay. So we have concluded chapter 8. When we meet next week, we will begin our study of chapter 9. Chapter 9 you'll find fascinating because it combines devotion with spiritual wisdom, knowledge of God, and it's a very profound chapter. It'll be a great study. We'll begin that in our next class. Are there any announcements for today? Anything? Okay, we'll conclude with our arati in prayers.